for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everyone, and I warmly welcome the Honourable Delegation. Madam Head of Delegation, good to see you again and your colleagues. And we acknowledge in absentia Minister Grigg. I do understand what it's like to give birth in office, so we do realise why she can't be here. Kia ora. New Zealand has long been a global leader in national development, both with regard to labour force, being the first country in the world to introduce a minimum wage, and with regard to gender equality, being the first place in the world to afford women the right to vote. Having said that, in South Australia, we do like to think we were the first in the world to grant the right to vote and stand for Parliament without caveats, but there we go. You have a strong history of women's representation, as you've reminded us in your opening remarks. It is a great honour to be the Task Force Rapporteur for Aotearoa New Zealand. We do acknowledge the progress since your last dialogue with the committee, notably the legalisation of abortion in 2020, and we commend the progress that has been made in order to ensure rural communities have access to abortion through the national establishment of the Abortion Telehealth Service, providing early access to medical abortion and counselling through telehealth, no matter where people live within the country. However, we have also heard today from your National Human Rights Institution and from NGOs around some concerning issues, including the interpretation of or the reinterpretation of Te Tiriti o Waitangi and the removal of several equity measures, including the Māori Health Women's, the Māori Health Authority, and removal of state support for UNDRIP. Madam Deputy Secretary, you gave an emotional and compelling expression of some of the, quote, significant work that your country is doing across the public and private sector to support better outcomes for and with Māori women and girls. But we're having difficulty reconciling some of those comments with some of the evidence that's been presented to us, including from NGOs who describe Māori women and girls as feeling, quote, unhoused, unnoticed, and unsafe. So I direct the delegation to General Recommendation 39, which I'm sure other committee members will invoke, dealing with the rights of Indigenous women and girls. It's relevant to every article we will be discussing today. We've heard from your Acting Human Rights Commissioner regarding regressive policy and a lack of constitutional recognition that might result in progress going backwards. So we look forward today to the productive dialogue on some of these particular matters and with specific reference to that reform program to which your National Human Rights Institution referred. I do note the recent Royal Commission into Abuse in Care, which highlighted the ongoing harm inflicted on Māori women and families for generations. And we note the government has agreed to issue an apology to survivors. However, it remains unclear as to whether or not victim survivors will receive redress, inclusive of rehabilitation and compensation. So we look forward to hearing more about the State Party's plans in relation to implementing those Royal Commission recommendations. Obviously, you've made reference to women's safety being a priority and the recent steps taken, and we acknowledge the 2018 passing of the Family Violence Act and the 2021 National Strategy to which you referred, albeit with prop, the Tararakara Strategy. However, we do note that the rates of violence against women and girls in New Zealand are alarming. Women are disproportionately at risk of facing violence, and I'm concerned about reports of reduced funding for initiatives to prevent violence against women and the cessation of a safety-focused regulatory review of online services and platforms, apparently before it was completed. I also want to acknowledge on behalf of the committee and offer our condolences in light of the senseless and devastating Christchurch mosque shootings of 2019 and acknowledge the government's swift response, including a Royal Commission implementing recommendations. As of 2023, I understand a number of recommendations were either marked as complete or underway, a commendable effort. I'm curious, though, the impact of that disaster, particularly on women and girls. And can you confirm whether there have been increased reports of Islamophobia as a consequence? Before moving to Articles 1 and 2 of the Convention, I would highlight, as you have done in your opening statement, the ongoing crisis in terms of the cost of living, the economic impacts of COVID-19, and the burden of poverty with which women in Aotearoa, New Zealand face. I now turn to Articles 1 and 2 of the Convention. I'm not sure if you want to reset the timer, Madam Chair, or you'll just trust me. I'm pleased to hear about the accessibility of the Convention and New Zealand's relevant reports through the Ministry of Women, the Manatu Wahini website, promoting the visibility of the Convention in the Wahani, for Wahani. However, I wonder if the State Party has any plans to publish CEDAW submissions and materials in Pacific languages so that all members of the New Zealand, all citizens of your community can read them and engage fully with our treaty body. Secondly, I understand that under domestic law, sex has been interpreted to include gender and sex characteristics to provide protections against gender discrimination, but I note the lack of specific mentions on of gender within the New Zealand Human Rights Act. Is that something that you're seeking to change or address? Does the State Party have any plans to amend the Human Rights Act to include specific prohibitions of discrimination on the grounds of gender identity, gender expression, and sex characteristics? Fourthly, the committee has heard that legal aid funding for cultural reports has apparently been removed. It was previously provided to judges in preparation for sentencing decisions, giving context regarding personal, social, and cultural factors. The Human Rights Commission reports that 67% of women in prison in New Zealand are Maori. And we have heard from NGOs about the compounding social inequities that lead to higher rates of incarceration. Please advise whether the State Party has plans for a replacement strategy for these cultural reports. And finally, could you please provide the committee with any data on the number of gender discrimination cases that have been brought before the courts in the last 5 years and the number of times the convention has been invoked? Again, I warmly welcome you, and I also acknowledge your deep engagement with civil society, something that is, of course, of interest always to the committee. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.